GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit JLTUS.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Hey, that's me. I serve as the host of GreenSense.
It's Bob Kessler here, your executive producer. Also, happy Thanksgiving weekend, everyone. We're all enjoying our leftovers right now.
Even those weeks that aren't after Thanksgiving, we search for people that are changing the world and making it a better place to live through their sustainable ideas and innovations.
They got to make common sense, got to make economic sense. That's how they get on GreenSense.
And they also have to show their environmental benefit. No greenwashing here. Only the best of the green companies make it on GreenSense. And Bob, who made it on this week?
Well, this week, actually, we're going to look into charitable donations. This is the time of year people are setting aside for causes that they believe in. So Charity Navigator's been around for a while. So we'll have them on to talk about the smart way you can give to causes that you believe in. Also, a report from the EPA says carbon emissions from cars and trucks are going down over the last several years. Fuel economy is going up. We'll find out more.
All that coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense. Gobble, gobble. The holiday season is upon us, which means people are thinking about giving to charities. The average household in the U.S. gives close to $3,000 to charities per Charity Navigator. And to tell us more about giving trends this year and how they help everyday people make good decisions on contributions is Sandra Minuti, Charity Navigator's VP of Marketing and CFO. Sandra, welcome to GreenSense.
Thank you for having me on the program.
Well, just in case someone out there hasn't heard about your organization and what you do, explain how Charity Navigator assists people with what you call smart giving.
So on our website at charitynavigator.org, donors will find information about all 1 million charities that exist in America today.
1 million charities? That's a lot.
Isn't that amazing? Yes. We also provide in-depth ratings for 8,000 of the largest charities, and they probably get upwards of a third of all contributions. So while there are many charities out there, most of them are pretty small local charities, and probably only about 20,000 of them are the big, well-known charities that we would be more familiar with.
The environmental movement's picked up momentum in the last 10 to 15 years, and our show focuses on sustainability. Have you seen increased giving to organizations that promote sustainability in the environment?
Definitely, and I think in light of the recent election, there's been a whole lot of conversation on social media and interest in those charities on our site. We definitely have seen an uptick in donations to those types of causes, and a lot of people turning to us to see the ratings of those different types of charities and where they can invest.
With a minimum amount of money out there, if environment's going up, what charities are seeing a decrease in donations?
So historically speaking, giving has pretty much stayed flat at 2% of GDP. So it's very interesting because, as you rightly point out, there's more and more charities coming into the sector, and they're all fighting over the same amount of dollars. So while we don't see giving going up much year to year, we see it moving from one area of the sector to the other. Over the last several years, we've seen a decrease in support for some religious organizations, while giving is going up to environmental groups, as well as international organizations in years in which we've had disasters overseas. So the earthquake in Haiti, the earthquake in Nepal, we definitely see spikes in giving then to international charities.
You have your list of 10 highly paid CEOs at low-rated charities, but you have a recent study that came out that shows that CEOs that are overpaid are not the norm. Is there a more recent trend?
Yeah, I definitely think there's some misconception among the public that, you know, reasonable salaries are unreasonable in the nonprofit sector. I think many donors are surprised to see that charity leaders make $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. They expect them to be paid nothing, and that's just not a reasonable expectation when you're talking about a multi-million dollar operation, which are the ones that we focus our efforts on evaluating. So I think donors need to kind of let that go a little bit and look more into the results of the charity, the efficiency of the charity, and the ethics of the charity, and not get too caught up in that one single salary figure.
Charity Navigator rates charities. Have you seen an impact from your rating on charities changing the way they do their business or work because of their rating?
Absolutely. So back in 2013, we added a whole second dimension to our rating system. So we look, historically, we looked at just the financial performance of charities. Now we also look at their, what we call accountability and transparency. And that's a gauge if they're following sort of best governance practices. Do they have a diversified board, or is the CEO reporting to her husband and her son-in-law? Do they have a conflict of interest policy? These kind of items that ensure ethical behavior at a nonprofit. And we've seen since 2013 more and more charities adopt these best practices at a really significant rate. So that's good news for all donors.
If you just joined us, you're listening to Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo. My guest is Sandra Minuti with Charity Navigator, and we're talking about trends in giving. The Giving Tuesday movement has been around for a few years, which is coming up after this weekend. How has that fared as a way of generating charitable giving?
It's really started to gain some significant traction. Last year, over 700,000 donors gave over $116 million to charities just on that one day. And that's only looking at online donations. So people writing checks, people volunteering, people helping neighbors, and just kind of being more altruistic on that day. That's not even included in that calculation. So it's definitely become a real thing. It happens after Black Friday and Cyber Monday, and it's the message that we should think about others at this time of year, about the environment and making the world a better place, and that you should do that however it seems best fit for you, whether it's writing that check or helping out somebody in need.
Charity Navigator has tips on how to stop the flood of charity mail. I'm not sure if you deal with emails, but that's something that we all have a dissatisfaction of. The reduction of mail reduces paper. Tell us a little bit about how that's been going in recent years.
Yeah, so I think it's very frustrating to most donors, whether they're concerned about the environment, and we definitely hear that a lot, or they're just sick of getting all this mail. That, you know, you give to one charity and then they sell your name and you wind up on all these lists and your mailbox is overflowing. So one thing that you can do is make sure that before you contribute to a charity, they have a donor privacy policy, which means they're promising not to share your information with others. And you can also communicate directly with the charity and let them know, I'm going to contribute to you once a year on this date, and I only need one email reminder. Please don't send me stuff in the mail. And I know that good charities will definitely be respectful of that. That helps them lower their costs and helps them be better stewards of the environment. So, you know, look for good charities that are receptive to that mission. Another thing that donors can do is to give anonymously, and we offer that option on our site through our Giving Basket, which is a donation processing tool. So if you really don't want to get the emails or the mail or anything, you can give anonymously.
Have you done research on how to make giving less invasive or annoying and come up with maybe more pleasant ways to get people to give?
I think the most important thing for donors to do is be proactive. So instead of giving in a knee-jerk reaction, $5 here, $10 there, or giving over the phone, be proactive. Sit down and really think about what you're passionate about. If it's the environment, do you want to help clean up our oceans? Do you want to help ensure that we have forests and hiking trails? You know, whatever it is, be very specific. Find charities doing that work, vet them, and then stick with them over the long haul. Become their partner. It makes it much easier for you to say no to those one-off requests. And it really helps you then be part of the movement to make our world a better place. Now you're a partner with the charity, and you're really advancing change together.
What I'm sort of hearing you hint around is there a something like a charitable planner, like there is a financial planner? It sounds like you're talking a little bit about having a charitable plan and a strategy for each individual on how they want to contribute.
Absolutely. We would advocate that all donors take their philanthropic activities that seriously, that they set out with a plan at the beginning of the year. If possible, they communicate that plan to the charities, again, so that you can help them be more efficient. So, you know, set up monthly donations if that's what makes sense for you, or communicate to the charity that you're going to give every year on Giving Tuesday, and set that plan. And then once a year, reevaluate your plan. Make sure that that charity is still doing the work that you're passionate about, and then go ahead and make your plan for the next year and set it up.
Is that a service you offer, charitable planning?
Well, I mean, that's sort of our whole philosophy of our site. We don't do kind of one-on-one work with our donors because we're just a staff of about 20 people and we serve over 7 million people each year. But that's essentially the heart of what we do. And people can use our giving basket to set up those monthly donations, to track their giving and come back and make new gifts and print out their tax receipts. So it's all sort of built into our site and our service.
That's Sandra Minuti, Charity Navigator's VP of Marketing and CFO. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is GreenSense.
GreenSense Farms, the largest network of commercial indoor vertical farms in the world, wants you to join in our green dream. You can now own a piece of the farm with our limited-time equity offering. You'll be promoting sustainable farming by investing in our transformative growing technology. Visit our Start Engine campaign at greensensefarms.com.
There are two good trends when it comes to new automobiles. Tailpipe emissions in the U.S. cars, SUVs, and light-duty trucks continue to go down, while fuel economy continues an upward trend. It's part of a new EPA report, and Dr. Dave Cook of the Union of Concerned Scientists joins us with a look and a review.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get further into this report, you did not write or participate in it, but you do have a lot of knowledge of it. Can you explain the role of the Union of Concerned Scientists as it relates to the report?
Sure. I think, you know, the Union of Concerned Scientists is one of many organizations that obviously is working towards reducing the impact of transportation on the climate and our oil use. And so, you know, we've worked very hard at on the regulations that are helping to drive fuel economy improvements across the fleet for consumers.
Are you an advocate of EPA, or are you sometimes at a contentious point of debate with them? Or both?
Well, we have definitely, you know, we are looking to go for the administration to go further than where they've gone. But we base that on the science and technology at the time. So it's, you know, we're certainly an advocate for strong science-based environmental policy.
Are you apolitical?
Yeah, we were a 403C, 403B, whatever the one is. We are not allowed. You know, we are independent of the political process. Can't electioneer. Can't So
that's great.
We are apolitical.
You're an objective scientific body that's trying to be an honest broker of the truth out there by promoting scientific thought and reasoning.
Exactly.
We don't have enough of that. I wish there was more. So let's take a look at the report on fuel economy. And they looked from 1975 2025 through this year. After leveling off around 20 miles per gallon for cars and trucks from 1990 till 2006, it shot up around 25 miles per gallon. How significant is this?
I mean, this is certainly indicative of why we need regulations in place. For too many years, the CAFE, the fuel economy standards for that manufacturers had to meet were flat. And what we saw is that, fuel economy actually went backwards as people started buying those big trucks. And then, you know, I think everyone knows that fuel prices shot up and, a lot of manufacturers were caught flat-footed because they'd spent all this money in trucks. And then, you know, we put regulations in place to help drive all types of vehicles to get efficiency improvements. And that's sort of what we're seeing now over the past, 5 to 10 years.
What about market-based solutions? When gasoline goes to $5 or $6 a gallon, people get very conservative in their driving habits, and they look for cars that get really high miles per gallon. How much of an impact can market-based solutions have here?
I think, market-based solutions are a complementary policy. The problem is that vehicles, the design of a vehicle on the road now was put into place, 5-7 years ago. And so, the response of industry to real-time, spikes in oil prices or things like that, they need to place that investment. They need to put that investment in place well before that spike happens. And so that's why we look to, sort of the fuel economy and greenhouse gas regulations, is that they allow for a long-term trajectory. And then, their marketplace solutions obviously help drive some of that consumer behavior, but we need sort of long-term certainty for those vehicles to be available in the first place.
So in your opinion, what are the main causes of the fuel economy increase?
So there has been, we've seen a surge in investment in fuel economy technologies. So there's been, transmissions have, we've gone from sort of an average of, 4 speeds to we're seeing 7, 8, 9, even now there's 10 speed transmissions on the market. And what that does is, that helps the engine operate at its most efficient. We're seeing, a use of stronger lightweight materials that can, reduce the amount of energy needed to move the vehicle, but still provide, a safe vehicle for consumers to drive. And so we're seeing, improvements on the engine, improvements on the body, improvements in the transmissions, and that's all. That's due to investment by suppliers and investment by the auto companies in these technologies.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Green Sense. My guest is Dr. Dave Cook of the Union of Concerned Scientists, and we're talking about decreases in tailpipe emissions and increases in fuel mileage. I'm Robert Colangelo. Well, that's interesting. So would you say that the cause and effect is because of these CAFE standards? That's why you're seeing all this investment?
I think it's a lot of the driver behind it. There was obviously a recognition by industry when fuel prices spiked that there was a recognition that they were unprepared for that. And I think so some of that is naturally a correction by the industry recognizing the mistakes they had made in the past. But I think, the long-term certainty of these regulations allows for all suppliers to know that, there's going to be a market for improvements in efficiency. And so they can invest that technology and make those investments well in advance of, consumer adoption and really put that into place. So I definitely think the spike in fuel economy ties very closely to changes in regulation.
CO2 emissions were also reported in the report, and they have leveled off in the 90s and early 2000s. What's the cause of that?
In aggregate, I mean, so CO2 emissions of the new vehicle fleet is obviously it's correlated to the fuel economy improvement. So on new vehicles, CO2 is going down just as fuel economy is going up. As we look at the fleet on a whole, a lot of that is driven by miles traveled. And so, you know, one of the concerns that we have right now is that transportation emissions have become a larger and larger share of our nation's global warming emissions. And so, you know, that's related both to, you know, continue to try to improve the efficiency of vehicles, but it also is, you know, it depends on how many miles passengers are driving each year. And so one of the trends that we're seeing is possibly that low gas prices are making people more and more efficient vehicles are making people are lowering the cost of driving and maybe are making people, you know, more willing to take that average road trip.
So let me just summarize what I think you just said is that the pie of emissions is getting bigger, but the individual contributors of the emissions is going down.
Yeah, that's right.
I just wanted to make sure. So that's a good thing that we're getting better, but the population is growing. So maybe that's a good point for reduction of fossil fuels and looking for other energy sources to power our cars. Yeah, but let me come to one here. It's Mazda, who's not known for its green vehicles, had the lowest fleet-wide average, the adjusted CO2 emissions, and the highest adjusted fuel economy performance. Why was Mazda able to score so high?
Well, one of the reasons why Mazda is able to score so high is that they've put a really concerted effort into developing the most efficient engines they can. You know, they obviously their focus is on conventional vehicles, but you know they've looked at how to improve the efficiency of those engines, you know, and are really they've turned to some novel developments where in direct injection, in valve control, in exhaust, and that has led to huge improvements in the thermal efficiency of their in the efficiency of their engines, and that's where they've put a concerted effort into the SkyActiv platform, and that's really led to tremendous improvements. Obviously, some of the factor in their overall average is that, you know, they focus on cars and SUVs, and so they don't have, you know, the large pickup sales that some other manufacturers may have. But really, it's about the investment that they've made in efficiency, and that's what's driving their improvements.
Science is hard. It takes an effort to be a scientist, to do the research, to understand the cause and effect that you observe. In your opinion, what should the average person be doing out there to make you know, scientific decisions rather than emotional decisions, especially when it comes to emissions and fuel mileage?
You know, I think, you know, we look at vehicle choice. Every consumer is going to make value, you know, value judgments of their own. You know, I think whether it's, you know, you have to look at a vehicle that is going to provide what you are looking for. But I think what's clear is that each year, you know, whether you're in the market for a large family vehicle, you know, a hatchback that's going to carry a bunch of your stuff, or, you know, a small efficient car, each year those vehicles are getting more efficient. And, you know, I think it's important as people, the fuel use from that vehicle is going to be a major contributor of your global warming footprint. And, you know, it's important to recognize that when you're looking at the vehicles, at a vehicle to purchase. And you're going to have that vehicle for a long time. And, you know, so it's certainly something to consider as you look at fuel economy. It's not just about saving money for your pocketbook, but it is really also the major contributor to your carbon footprint.
Dave, thanks for joining us on Green Sense.
Yep, happy to be of help.
That's Dr. Dave Cook of the Union of Concerned Scientists joining us on Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo.
Green Sense is sponsored by JLT Specialty USA, experienced professionals ensuring energy, technology, and aerospace, serving complex risk with creative solutions. Visit usa.jlt.com.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Green Sense. I know this is the weekend after Thanksgiving. You're all feeling a little full, and we'll be back next week with more guests. Bob, who do we have?
The North American Butterfly Association just launched its continent-wide butterfly habitat network. You know, we hear a lot about bees and their population being in jeopardy. Same could be said for butterflies, and they're just as important. So we'll find out more about that.
Visit our website, greensensefarms.com, subscribe to our podcast, or view the list of radio stations that air our show. Send me an email with any suggestions on how we can improve the show, or if you have some good idea for guests that you'd like to see on the show that are making the world a better place to live. We hope we inspired you this week. I know it's tough. You're on that couch after a big meal. The littlest action multiplied by millions of people could have big environmental results out there. So stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
Green Sense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan at Green Sense Farms, the largest indoor commercial vertical farm in the world. We walk the walk and talk the talk, growing leafy green vegetables 24/7, free of pesticides, herbicides, with non-GMO seeds, conserving resources, and reducing waste. Watch us grow. The program is copyright Green Sense Farms, all rights reserved.